All right. Hey, Jordan, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Dave?
I'm tired. I just worked. I nursed it up all day, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. I also worked today.
Yeah. How was that?
It was okay. I made a mistake, and then I spent like the whole afternoon trying to fix it, so that wasn't as good. But sometimes it happens.
My thing today was I had to help the doctor put a chest tube in.
Uh-huh.
And I don't do that very much, so like every time he asked for something else, like another nurse would have just had it standing by, but I was like, oh, yeah, I'll be right back. So I left the room like 10 times grabbing different stuff that I was supposed to have. Anyone else would just know, but I was just like, oh, yeah, chest tube, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's been one of those days. But I'm happy to be here substituting for Steele. I hope I can fill his shoes.
Yeah, so this is Dave. I'm with Jordan today. Steele couldn't make it, and I brought in Jordan. He's been on the show before, and I'm excited to talk to you because I think we're into a lot of the same stuff. And Steele has probably never actually seen an action movie, so we're going to get into it.
No, that's yeah. He's above all that.
So this is Off the Chain with Dave, Missing Steele. We got Jordan today, but we've got some good stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
We got a segment that I'm calling Over the Top. We're going to talk about the top action heroes currently working in Hollywood right now.
Oh, man.
We're going to talk about some comic book characters and what would happen if they battled. And, of course, we got songs for you, Unchained Melodies, and Jordan's brought some book wisdom for us. So first, Over the Top. Jordan, do you know why I called the segment Over the Top?
I can only guess, Dave, and I'm going to guess that it's due to the Sylvester Stallone hit that was revolved around arm wrestling. Am I right?
Yeah, I own this movie.
Oh, come on.
I've made my wife watch it multiple times. Can you remember any scenes? Do you remember what it's about or anything?
Is there a scene where somebody's arm wrestling with somebody and his arm breaks in half? Is that this movie?
No, I think that sounds like a much worse or maybe much better movie.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone is a professional arm wrestler so that he can buy he wants to buy a really nice truck because he's a trucker.
Oh, okay.
But he drives the truck and he's got this kind of weight set thing in his truck. So the whole time he's driving, he's working his arm wrestle arm. Like he keeps working it the whole time. So his arm wrestle arm is just huge.
Right.
And then it also has one of my favorite scenes in cinema where they use kind of a reality television approach towards the end of it. There's like a big arm wrestling tournament. And so they interview Stallone and he's talking into the camera. And if you've never seen this scene, Jordan, you have to.
Okay.
But he talks about, you know, how he gets in the mind frame to be an arm wrestler. And what he does is he has a hat that he turns to backwards. It's forward, but once he turns backwards, he's all business.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that pretty common for elite athletes though? They have like a physical thing, tick or whatever you call it, where like, this is where I turn from, you know, turn on beast mode or whatever it is.
I think so. I'm not sure that it always involves like a physical object, but
that's true.
I wish it would.
Yeah.
But so that's why it's Over the Top. It's named after one of the greatest action heroes of all time, one of his best films. But what I wanted to talk to you about was right now, who are the top five action movie stars?
So yeah.
Who do you got?
For me, definitely on that list is Jason Statham. There was a time in my life where, you know, up until recently, probably just when we had the baby, where I'd basically seen everything he'd ever been in. You know, if he was in it, that was enough for me to watch it.
So how does Statham, why is he in the top five?
Okay, so for me, one of the things that he has is a signature move, and it's in a ton of movies. The first movie it's in is Transporter, and it's probably my favorite scene of that movie. It's right after he survives the car bomb. He goes back to the bad guy's house and rings the doorbell. There's a fisheye scene where he's standing in the peephole, and then he just front kicks the door right in. You know, and that front kick, that full forward, just front, like both arms up, pulled back with the front kick. That's like, he does that in almost every movie, and it's great. You know, it's just a power move, reckless power move.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would say, for me, that's something that anchors it, is he's got that power move, you know, that pure power that when I think of an action movie star, that's one of the things I think of. And then also he's got the moves in terms of choreography, you know.
My favorite, I think, Statham scene of all time, you'll know, I don't remember if it's in Transporter 1 or 2, but there's a bunch of dudes he has to beat up. So what do? Number one, you dump a bunch of oil on the floor.
Yeah, yes.
And then number two, I'm not entirely sure why, you jump kind of on a bike and you break off the pedals so that they're attached to your shoes.
Right.
And then you proceed to fight these dudes in the oil, and the bike pedals enable you to be even awesomer.
Right.
And you take them all out.
That's right. It gives you traction so you don't slip on the oil. That's what it was.
And that's probably my favorite Statham scene of all time.
Yeah,
and
that's
he's a good one. He's just a gritty dude, and he's a dude. He's handsome, but he's not pretty, which is important. I don't want a pretty boy being my action hero. I just want him to have some rugged good looks where, of course, the babe in the movie is going to like him.
Right.
And of course they do. He's Jason Statham.
Yeah. And the thing about his is that first they never really like him that much. They're intrigued, but then once the swagger... And when they find out he actually has a heart of gold, that's when, you know, it gets him. So there's a lot of movies of his that I like. There's one called Chaos I actually just watched recently. That's pretty good. Got a nice twist in it. Wesley Snipes is in that one. You know, the Crank movies are ridiculous. They're just ridiculous. And then he was in a movie with Jet Li called War that I really liked. There's so many. I could just go on and on. There's the one he did with Guy Ritchie. Well, all the ones he does with Guy Ritchie.
Oh, yeah. Those are terrific. That's what kicked him off in the whole...
Yeah, totally.
...a badass genre. I like the Heart of Gold. I think that's kind of defining your action hero, dude. Because no matter what he does, you're still able to root for him because somehow you know he has a Heart of Gold.
That's right. So who would be on your list?
Everyone already knows. Statham's on there, but Vin Diesel.
Right. Yes, of course.
He fits. He also fits the mold. He's got a heart of gold. You know, no matter what movie Diesel's in, like, he's in the right.
Right.
Whatever choices he's making are exactly the right things, the things you're supposed to be doing. He doesn't make mistakes, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and he's another one, like I say, where it's believable. If he does a power move, which Vin Diesel's going to do, if he's going to slam a guy on a table or throw him through a glass window, you're like, yeah, he could do that, you know? It's not like, oh, come on. You know, he's a tough guy. He looks like a tough guy.
And he just looks tough. He has that look. Like, if you ran into him in the pool hall, you're not going to mess around with this guy. He's not going to be a guy you're trying to hustle.
Of course not. No. Yeah.
Because number one, it's not going to work. You can't hustle Vin Diesel. And number two, if you try to do it, like, he's going to beat you up.
Right. Yeah. So we've talked about the Fast and Furious movies, and we'll continue to do that, I'm sure. And we talked a little bit about the Riddick movies. Are there any others that stick out to you from Vin Diesel? I've got one at least.
The only thing I can think of right now is The Pacifier, and that's not an action movie.
not exactly, but that's another thing, though, is a lot of the action stars go into the action comedy crossover. You know, your Kindergarten Cops.
Yeah, that's key.
Yeah.
If you're a good enough action hero, you can play off your action hero status to lead a comedy.
That's right. A lot of people have done that. The Rock's done that. The Tooth Fairy. Jackie Chan's done it. He's got some Spy Next Door or something like that where he babysits kids.
Denzel Washington's done it with Mark Wahlberg in Two Guns.
Yeah.
Because if that was not a comedy, then I don't understand that movie.
Yeah.
But Diesel, he just has it. He's got a natural toughness.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a believableness to everything he's doing. And most importantly, I think any good action hero, the lines that they say in a movie need to be able to be translated to a trailer without losing anything. Like,
oh, yeah.
Every line Vin Diesel says now, like, you throw it in a trailer and you're stoked.
Oh, yeah, totally. The other movie, Dave, that I was thinking of is Triple X.
Oh, yes. I can't believe I forgot it.
Yeah. So good. What more do you need to say?
You can say that he surfed down an avalanche that he created.
Yes.
By throwing hand grenades out.
That's right.
I remember I watched that movie, you know, more than a decade ago. We were watching it. I was in college, and we just watched it. My girlfriend had just come over, and she was like, "What are you guys watching?" I go, "We're watching Triple X." She's like, "Is that a nasty movie?" I'm like, "No, it's just Vin Diesel." We're watching deleted scenes at this point, and it was a mistake, Jordan. The deleted scenes were, there were some nasty scenes there.
Oh, no. That's not good. Well, maybe that's why they were deleted.
Yeah, they were cut to make it PG-13.
The other one that I think a lot of people forget that Vin Diesel was in is Saving Private Ryan.
And he was fantastic in that.
Yeah.
I remember
he was great.
He was super likable. I'm like, I hope this guy has a great Hollywood career, and he's exceeded my hopes in every way.
Yeah, he's great.
So far, we're in agreement. We got Statham, Diesel. Now we're doing Neeson.
Yeah, we mentioned Neeson, and I think we're in agreement on this, too.
So how do you think that happened? Like, Neeson went from being just like an actor. You know, he did Schindler's List.
Right.
So all of a sudden, he's Liam Neeson. Like, what happened?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I think Rob Roy was part of it. The sword fight. Have you seen that, Rob Roy?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
The sword fight he has with that little British dude. What's his name? He was in the Incredible Hulk movie.
Oh,
he played Tim Roth.
Yeah.
That sword fight he has with Tim Roth has got to be one of the best sword fights in cinema history. And so I think about it. I think Rob Roy, that was one of the ones that said this dude's could be an action star. I don't know if he was in it a bunch of action movies before that, really.
Well, he was in Darkman. I mean, you can't forget Darkman.
Yeah, Darkman, yeah.
Which is fantastic. But I want to talk about that sword scene because Rob Roy, I didn't like the movie that much. Like, I'm watching it the whole time like, all right, when's my payoff going to happen? Like,
right,
I was kind of bored. And then the sword fight happens, and I'm like, whoa!
I know. It's so crazy.
Thank you.
And see, and that's where it is again. The power move. That's how he beats him. Power move.
Tell me. Yeah, just describe the sword fight.
Okay, so what happens is Rob Roy, Tim Roth. You can picture him in your head. Liam Neeson, he's a big dude, right? Tim Roth, not as big a dude. So you've got this big Scottish or Irish or whatever he's supposed to be guy. And he's going to fight Tim Roth. And Tim Roth is wearing, like, you know that picture of the boy in blue? That famous? He's basically wearing that. And he's got the powdered wig and the ruffles and stuff. And so they're going to pick weapons. And so Rob Roy, Liam Neeson, picks this really big, single-edged cutlass thing. And then the Tim Roth character gets this little, tiny, like, fencing sword. And so you're like, okay, two way different styles. And this guy, Tim Roth's character, is a sword fighting expert. So he's faster, his weapon is quicker, and he's just slicing and dicing and basically making mincemeat of Rob Roy. And then
he's owning, like, Neeson has no chance. Like, I'm watching this sword fight, I'm really worried that Neeson's going to die. Like, I think it's a possibility.
Totally. Yeah. And basically is. And he gets him down finally. He's just toying with him. And I think earlier in the movie, there was like a sword fight scene with this Tim Roth character where it was established that he was like a master and he was ruthless. And so he's basically got Rob Roy down. He's toying with him. He's Rob Roy's losing blood. And finally Rob Roy falls down to one or both knees and he thinks he's got him. So he starts prancing around. He goes over and he goes to deal the death blow and Rob Roy catches his sword. Catches Tim Roth's sword with his left hand and just grabs and holds it. And it zooms in and you can see the blood coming out of his fist, you know. And the Tim Roth character is trying to pull it out, and he can't do it. And then Rob Roy just, I can't even remember if he stands up or if he just delivers the blow from his knees. I think he gets up and he just delivers this huge blow with this cutlass. Wham! Just probably cuts him from his shoulder blade to his hip. And it's just this huge gaping wound straight down. And the Tim Roth character is just like staggers around and just falls down dead and he wins. And it's just, it's a great fight.
It's so good because, I mean, how many times have you been watching and you think like, why doesn't he just grab the guy's sword? Why doesn't he just do that?
Yeah.
And then finally Rob Roy does something like that. And you're like, thank you, Rob Roy.
Yeah.
I knew it could work.
Yeah, totally. And then I think maybe after that, it could have been Star Wars.
Yeah, he's Star Wars.
There was Gangs of New York. He wasn't in that for very long, but that was a wicked battle scene that he was in.
And he's just a tough guy. And then once Taken took off, essentially it's just an action movie, which is a wonderful action plot I love. there's some plot device that makes it so the action star has to kill 30 to 40 people.
Oh, yeah.
And you just go through the film, you're watching him kill all these different people. That's Taken, John Wick, there's lots of them.
And it, yeah, I haven't seen John Wick yet. That's on my list, though, because I've heard it's way good.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's been on my list. Yeah, I mean, Liam Neeson, so many great movies. Even Batman, he was Ra's al Ghul.
He's like in his 60s, but he owns, I don't know how much longer he'll be able to stay in the top five, but he's there right now.
Definitely.
And the next guy is also someone that we both definitely agree on, The Rock.
Oh, yes, Dwayne Johnson. I remember watching The Rock when he was a pro wrestler. And he was great. I mean, he had so much charisma. He was funny. He was smart. I still remember this interview he gave with Mean Gene. And The Rock goes to Mean Gene and says, "Mean Gene, what do you think about this or that?" And Mean Gene is like, starts to answer, you know, well. And The Rock goes, "It doesn't matter what you think." I just remember it's so great.
He has an awesome charisma.
He does.
I didn't watch wrestling, but I would assume he just owned it. Just so charismatic.
He was. He was great. His persona was hilarious. And, it changed as time went by, you know, his persona. But he was always kind of just like this funny dude. He even had he came out with like a rap song with somebody. I can't remember who it was with. Yeah, it was, you know, at the awful and great at the same time.
And what's awesome is that he's been able to progress from there. He'll still go back and do wrestling. And I don't know, he'll maybe do the eyebrow raise some. But like he's just expanded. He now owns the action genre.
Oh, totally.
Like I just saw on a commercial today the new movie coming out where he has to fight an earthquake.
Yeah. And
I know he's gonna win.
Of course.
It's Dwayne Johnson. He's gonna beat the earthquake.
Oh yeah. It looks great. And I don't know if you know this, but he's just signed on to be in the DC Universe films, I believe is going to be playing Black Adam. I don't know if that means anything to you, but
it means I feel just a little disappointed. I want all my guys to be in the Marvel universe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still have hope for the DC universe, but Black Adam's a pretty cool character. So, but
those are four of our five: Statham, Diesel, Neeson, The Rock.
Right. The fifth spot.
And this is the most interesting spot.
Because
you and I couldn't come to a consensus. Like, who do you think deserves to be there?
Gosh, this is a hard one, you know, because I think about who's active right now, and I think about, well, there's really not someone that's like a – well, there are definitely a lot of actors out there right now that are in action movies and do action movies, but it's not like necessarily what they're – some of them have become known for it, I guess, in the recent times. Like Tom Cruise, I think, now is more of an action star – maybe now than he's ever been. I don't know.
Yeah. All it comes out with now are action movies where he is a character named Jack.
Right.
Just every movie, he's named Jack. And honestly, I'd buy in big time. I love it. Well, I want him to stay in this phases of his career forever.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Reacher was great. The End of Tomorrow or Live, Die, Repeat or whatever they decided to end up calling it, was great. And I feel bad because I think that the trailer didn't really do it justice. You know, they just didn't explain it well.
And the name was kind of lame. It was a little bit unclear. But yeah, it was terrific. It was Cruise at his cruisiest.
Yeah, that was great. But, you know, for some reason, though, I don't know what it is. Part of me just doesn't want to like him. But every time I guess maybe that's it. But every time I see his movies, I'm like, yeah, he's great. You can't deny it.
And I think another guy that kind of falls into that category is Denzel Washington.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. The thing about Denzel is I don't want to call him an action star because he's too good an actor, it seems. I don't know. Not that those other guys are bad actors, but just seems like he's on another level. I don't know if that's fair to say or what you think about that.
Like, if you go to his IMDb page and you look at what he starred in for the past like 5 or 6 years.
Right.
All of it. Well, he started Flight. That's the only one that's not just a straight action movie.
Right.
All the other ones are straight action. Yeah. Unstoppable. Denzel's the only person that can stop the train.
Yeah, that's
Safe
true.
House. Denzel's the only person that can make you believe that Ryan Reynolds could be in an action movie.
No, that's not fair. I remember seeing the first time I remember seeing Ryan Reynolds was Blade 2, and he was good. I liked him. Or maybe it was Blade 3. one of those blades. But he was likable. But yeah, I forgot about that movie, Unstoppable, and I forgot about Safe House. Both great. You know, I enjoyed both of those. The Book of Eli, I enjoyed it, you know.
I watch all his movies now because they're all like the same thing. Right. He doesn't really star in real movies anymore. He just does like really funny action movies.
Yeah. I mean, when I think of Denzel and action movies, the one that comes to my mind first and foremost is Man on Fire.
Oh, yes.
That scene under the bridge. So if, I mean, the basic plot is he's a veteran. He's had some hard times. He's kind of relying on the sauce a little, but he gets a job as a bodyguard for like a 7-year-old Dakota Fanning.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like adorable, you know, and she gets kidnapped and he is very angry about that.
Yeah. Denzel does not take that kindly.
No, no. And so he tracked down the people that kidnapped her and, you know, one by one disposes of them. And there's this one scene where he's got the guy handcuffed and duct taped on the hood of a car under a bridge. Do you remember this part?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's placed a bomb. Is there a medical term for this? He's basically given him an explosive suppository. Is that?
Yes. That's the appropriate term. Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, it's great.
Oh, and then I love it. So I don't know that you could put him on the list just because I think he does other stuff and he's a still respected actor. But you look at what he's done recently, all it is these action movies that I love.
Yeah, I think there's a strong argument to be made that he would be an action movie star now.
Yeah.
Maybe just.
But a film that he starred in pretty recently that he also starred in with Mark Wahlberg, who I would nominate for a spot on the list. And I think you would debate with me, but Two Guns. Did you see Two Guns?
I haven't seen Two Guns yet that I can recall. I might have seen. What happened? I don't know. What's the plot?
You don't even really need. All you need to know is Denzel and Mark Wahlberg are in it, and it's called Two Guns. Like, you know what happens.
Yeah. Well, that kind of, you know, now that you mentioned Mark Wahlberg, I'm thinking back to a movie with Mark Wahlberg and The Rock and Anthony Mackie, Pain and Gain. Did you see that? Not really an action movie, but still, it was good. He plays like this swindling, looks kind of like a bodybuilder guy, and they decide they're going to do this swindle, and it goes horribly wrong for them. But, okay, so what else? Wahlberg. I mean, he's been in some good action movies, I suppose. The only one I can really think of right now is Shooter. I don't know.
Yeah, he could churn out a movie like that every year, and I'll go. Four Brothers, Shooter.
Okay. Yeah, I liked Four Brothers. Four Brothers is kind of old now, though, isn't it? That's like at least 10 years old.
Yeah, that was like a decade ago, but it still carries weight with me because I've seen it multiple times, and okay. I love when you get four brothers together, that they're adopted brothers.
Right.
And I love that there's a line somewhere in there where the cops are talking about the brothers because they got adopted by this nice lady.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, they may seem like they're garbage, but they're senators compared to what they would have been without this lady.
Yeah. I just remember being excited when I saw that coming out because Andre 3000 was in it.
Yeah. But Mark, he just keeps doing these. Like, and, you know, he'll do other kinds of movies, but he'll come back to, like, Contraband, where he's a smuggler dude doing action. And I'll tell you about Two Guns because you have to see it.
All right.
Denzel and Mark are both undercover agents. They don't know each other undercover. Things get crazy. They end up having to team up. And not to spoil the ending, but they blow up a car with millions of dollars in it just because they're awesome.
Okay, I'll have to give that a chance. I'll keep an open mind about Wahlberg.
Thank you. Yeah. Who else could be on in there?
Well, there's a few. I mean, Keanu could be on there. He could still put out a good action movie, you know.
Oh, John Wick, fantastic.
And the thing about Keanu is I just like him. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I just identify with him for some reason. Isn't he part Asian? Is he part Filipino? I think he is.
I have no idea. That sounds good.
But yeah, I mean, if it was the 90s, we definitely have to consider him because, you know, The Matrix, Point Break.
Oh,
you know,
that's one of my favorite action films of all time.
Yeah, you cannot. He's definitely has a place in this, whatever we call it.
The top five action movie stars of the day.
Yeah, he might be on there. I don't know.
And you need to see John Wick. I think that we're ready for a Keanu renaissance of action films because of John Wick, how good it was.
Yeah.
So I would put Statham, Diesel, Neeson, The Rock, and it's hard for me to say right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, with Denzel's output the past 5-6 years, I go Denzel.
Yeah, that might be who it is. There's some honorable mentions. I'd just like to mention some names of guys, but I think their output's kind of starting to wane. Scott Adkins, I think he's a guy that had ton of potential that never really, for whatever reason, never got tapped as much as I think it should have. Michael High White, he's awesome. He was in Spawn.
Yeah,
Black Dynamite, great. He's like a kung fu expert. Arnold Schwarzenegger is putting out some stuff lately that hasn't been that bad.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Sabotage, I thought was pretty good. That one with Johnny Knoxville, I can't remember the name of it, but that one was pretty good. And then this new Terminator movie looks like it could be pretty good. You know, it might still be on the list. I saw a trailer recently too. It looks like he's going to be in some kind of a zombie movie. So there's that.
He's still bringing it. I watched Escape Plan, which is him and Stallone.
Oh right, and
I just assumed it would be really bad. And that I would enjoy it because it was just terrible. But it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I was watching it. I was like, wait a second. This is like a movie. What's going on?
Right. Well, I think those guys can still do it. I mean, Stallone, you know, he's done, you know, I don't know. The Expendables franchise, it's pretty good. It's almost like an homage to itself, but they're still enjoyable. The most recent Rambo was crazy violent, but it was depressing for me. But, I mean, it was still had a lot of action.
So that's what we got for Over the Top. I think I feel comfortable with those five guys. And
yeah,
we can talk about it again in the future. But I love it. I want them to keep producing. I know we've talked to Steele in the past about kind of why we love these movies so much. And it's kind of hard for me to define. But it's just an excitement. I just buy into it. I get swept up in the charisma of these guys. And obviously, I don't want to see people get hurt or explosions happen in real life.
No, on a movie screen,
I love it. To stick kind of to this theme of awesome fighting, we're going to go to comic book battles. So
all right.
What we've done is we've come up with some characters that, and we're going to talk about what would happen if they face off. The first one I came up with, Jordan, because I just wanted to pick two characters that were almost the exact same. From DC and from Marvel, Aquaman versus the Submariner.
Right, Prince Namor.
Yes.
That's a good question.
What do you think? What happens here?
Well, personally, I think Aquaman gets a lot of flack that he probably doesn't deserve. I think he's a lot cooler than people put out. And in the new DC movie universe, you know, the guy that they picked to play Aquaman is Jason Momoa. He's probably best known for playing Khal Drogo in Game of Thrones. Uh-huh. And he's just a big old dude. And I don't know if you've seen the pictures of him in the Aquaman.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, he looks awesome. It got me excited. So,
well, you take Aquaman, and like traditionally he was kind of this nerdy guy. He wears an orange shirt and he talks to fish. But a comic book author that I really like because he wrote Hulk for so long, his name's Peter David. And yeah. he got a hold of Aquaman, and I think he made it so Aquaman's hand got cut off.
Yep.
He made Aquaman grow long hair and a beard.
Yep.
And just kind of made Aquaman cool.
Yeah. And that's kind of the version of Aquaman that I think of when I think of Aquaman. The orange suited guy, that's the kind of guy I grew up with. But the new Aquaman that you're talking about with the hook for the hand, and he's grizzled. He's kind of a more of a punch first, ask questions later kind of character now. Much more gritty than he was. So I'm going to go with Aquaman over Prince Namor, who he kind of looks like that guy from Big Bang Theory with like a, what's that name of that? With a pompadour. I don't know.
So the Submariner, the character's a little bit confusing and weird, but he, you know, he just wears like a Speedo, a green one, and he's got pointy ears, looks kind of like Spock up in the head region. And then on his ankles, for some reason, he's got tiny wings. So not only can he breathe and live underwater and communicate with fish, but he can shoot out of the water in these tiny wings that are like, you know, paperclip sized around the fly. And I just don't know what's going on. But I know Here's what I think. If Submariner is fighting Wiener Orange Shirt Aquaman, he's going to win. Submariner wears a Speedo. He's got tiny wings on his feet. He's going to beat the guy. But if he fights Aquaman with a beard and that carries a trident,
right.
Like that barbed, Aquaman's probably going to kill him.
Yeah, a barbed trident. Yeah. No, yeah. Okay, I agree with that. There's no controversy here on that one.
Yeah, so what's one you want to talk about?
Okay, the one that gets me the most excited is Hulk versus Darth Vader. This one's crazy.
When I thought of this one, I got real excited. I was like, this is what we were meant to talk about.
Yeah,
Hulk this is fighting yeah. Darth Vader.
Okay, and I'm talking about not talking about what's his face wimpy Episode 3 Darth Vader. We're talking we're talking about like Episode 5. Let's see, 5 Darth Vader. Episode 3, you know, 4 and 5, 6, Darth Vader. Maybe not episode 6. Not 6. Episode
6, he starts to turn good. We don't know. We're talking 4 and 5, Darth Vader versus Hulk. I'm talking Planet Hulk. Like, huge, wicked strong. He's not super stupid. Like, he can talk, but he just gets real angry and he smashes everything.
Okay. Yeah. I like this. Both characters at the top of their game.
Yes.
So, this is the big question that I have. Can the lightsaber pierce the Hulk's gamma irradiated skin?
Now, it can, but it's not like when Vader cuts off Luke's hand, he just kind of, you know, flicks the lightsaber a little bit and the hand comes off. Like, you're not cutting off Hulk's hand like that.
Okay.
You're going to draw blood. You're going to get in there, but it's not like, it's going to be like a butter knife going into wood. Like, you can get in there, but it's tough.
Okay, so how many hacks, suppose the Hulk were somehow to be restrained, how many hacks before the hand comes off? 20?
No, less than that. Okay. I'd go with like 6.
Oh, okay. Okay, so he can do some damage.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
So, like, Hulk, like he doesn't have time to mess around. I don't think he would. Like, I think Darth Vader's, like, you know, his force chokehold. That's not going to do anything to the Hulk.
No, probably not.
Angry.
Yeah.
And if Hulk gets up to Vader, he will tear him apart. Yeah. Vader is not really a healthy man.
No. And here's the thing. Even at his best, the Hulk has Vader easily on speed and power.
Yes.
So really, it's a matter of, can Darth Vader deal a deft enough blow to incapacitate the Hulk enough that he can then deal a killing blow or something like that? Because I think you're right. I think the Hulk gets a hold of Vader, it's going to be over quick, because there's going to be smashing or tearing, and then it's over.
So really, it's almost a coin flip, because I think in some circumstances, Vader is going to get what he needs done with his lightsaber, and he's going to use the Force a little bit, maybe throw some crates at the Hulk so the Hulk is distracted enough for him to get in with the lightsaber and take him out.
Yeah.
But if Vader makes even part of a mistake, the Hulk will kill him.
Correct. The Vader's got to go for weak points. He's going to have to go for the eyes, or he's going to have to go for the throat. If he can get a cut somewhere on some kind of a major artery where the Hulk's going to black out pretty quickly, then maybe he's got a chance. But, you know, I mean, you're the medical professional. When I think of that, I think of, well, he's got the jugular, right?
Yeah.
And then the femoral and the thigh on the inner groin.
Yeah.
And those are both not easy places to get to.
No, not on the Hulk. The Hulk's legs are massively muscular.
Exactly.
So a groin shot's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's one thing it seems like comic books just gloss over. There's never a groin shot.
No, like, not very often.
If I'm a villain fighting Spider-Man, like, I'm going to hit him in the groin.
Well, you know who hits in the groin a lot? The Punisher. He'll do it whenever he needs to. But I don't know. I think for me on this one, I think I might lean a little bit towards the Hulk.
And the Hulk's my favorite comic book character of all time. I think he wins.
Yeah, I'm just going to base purely on durability and the amount of damage that he can take in comparison to Darth Vader.
Vader would do better in a longer fight. And I think Vader could take a lot of people, but the Hulk is not going to fight Vader for a long time. It's going to be over real quick.
The Hulk is no battle with him is going to be a drawn out thing. I think it's either he smashes him or or he's going to be incapacitated at some point.
Okay. So I was trying to think of this one. So I was like, Superman versus, and then I was like, who cares? It's Superman. Superman's lame. I don't care who he fights. I have no interest in it.
Right. I love Superman. Superman's probably my favorite.
Why?
I don't know. He's great. He's just, for some reason, I identify with Superman. And one of my things that I love to think about or daydream about is like, what if I wake up tomorrow with the powers of Superman, except I don't have a weakness to kryptonite? Or Krypton, I guess. But I don't know. I like Superman. I think he's always going to try to do the right thing, sometimes to a fault. I think Superman is extremely loyal. Mm-hmm. I like that. And just the whole mythos around Superman, to me, I just love it. So there's this thing, DC 1 million, and it's like, what would happen if DC is around long enough to publish its 1 millionth issue? And so they did the math, and it would be like something like in the year 2384 or whatever. And so they did a series where it was like DC 1 million. Okay, we're going to do what happens to these characters, you know, in the future in 2384 or whatever, or in a million years from now, you know. And and what ends up happening with Superman is just great. And it kind of ties in with all. Did you read All-Star Superman?
I did. I like that.
Yeah. And like, so the story, at least as I understand it, with DC 1 million is kind of similar to the All-Star Superman and kind of ends, you know, how All-Star Superman ends. Did he survive? Did he die?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. DC 1 million answers that question and he survives. So Superman spends something like 15,000 years in the middle of the sun. just gathering power from the sun, studying, you know, through meditation. He basically becomes like this transcendental power force, basically like this God thing. And he's awesome. And he goes on all these adventures. Like, so in DC, the DC universe, the edge of the universe, there's this thing called the Source Wall. And it's like the edge of the universe, and supposedly beyond it lies the source or a being or something that has like all knowledge.
Uh-huh.
And Superman finds a way to get on the other side of the Source Wall and then studies with that, like learns with that. Anyway, it's so cool. And then eventually he fathers this race of Supermen and they watch over the universe. And it's just really cool.
But to me, that's the only way to make Superman interesting is to make the character go in some kind of direction like that, where there's real consequences, real things happening. Otherwise, like from episode to episode, he's like, I'm super strong. Nothing can affect me.
Right.
And then a guy comes at him and like, well, a guy's coming at Superman with a gun. Like,
right.
What's going to happen?
Yeah. And I think that's the problem that the DC universe has in compared to the Marvel universe. If you look at if you stack up the Avengers, it's like, okay, you've got, you know, people that can do pretty amazing things. And then you've got Thor, like he's on another level, right?
Uh-huh.
If you look at the Justice League and line them up, it's like you got five Thors, you know, and Batman.
It's not that compelling.
Well, yeah, but the reason I like it is the enemies that they have to face have to be much more powerful and on a different scale.
Uh-huh.
You have to be fighting interdimensional. And that's what they do. Like they end up having interdimensional bad guys, you know, time travel, all kinds of stuff like that. So you've got your Darkseids, who's basically a god, you know, and he rules a planet called Apocalypse. And he takes Apocalypse and he travels around the universe and he, you know, conquers planets. That's someone the Justice League can fight, you know. Or you've got Brainiac, this super strong intelligence that basically does the same thing. Goes around from planet to planet. Collects all the information. Once he has all the information stored in his systems, the planet's no longer necessary and it can be deleted.
But for the Justice League to be compelling, it has to be against something like that.
Right.
And I think Marvel characters can be compelling in lots of different ways. They will take on powerful alien races and stuff, but they'll also take on things on Earth that are actually real challenges to them.
Right. Yeah. And I think in DC, they kind of try to do that too, you know, with certain things. And it looks like in the new Batman v Superman, they're going to try to kind of tackle some of those things. Like in the DC universe, in some of the iterations, there is like a sect of people that worship Superman as their savior. You know, and that creates issues in the world. And I mean, you've read Dark Knight Returns, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I mean, that totally tackles those issues. You know, like Superman disappears for, or there's an incident, you know, and Superman disappears and becomes like a secret government agent and basically is run. He's basically just a puppet for this undercover, underground cabal that runs the world, you know, and it becomes this oppressive regime. And they use those tendencies of Superman to kind of play by the rules and do what he's told to do because of his own personality flaws. That Batman has to come in and shut him down. And he does, you know. But so I think for DC, what they conquer or they try to tackle is not necessarily like the good versus evil kind of thing, but they try to tackle like more of the personalities of the characters and what happens when you have characters who follow their personality flaws to the extreme. And are, in Superman's case, sometimes he can be so rigid that he ends up doing more harm than good.
So basically, we were just discussing Superman versus lameness, and you probably won. I think you won that discussion. Superman probably isn't lame, but lots of times I think he is.
Well, and I think you're not alone in that camp.
All right. Well, and I don't know if we've won the we're lame, us versus lameness with all the stuff we've been talking about, but we're gonna let's do some songs now, Jordan.
All right.
So Unchained Melodies, you guys know we like to pick songs that we like to share. What do you got for us this week, Jordan?
I've got a couple things. So the first one that I want to share is I was looking at some South by Southwest stuff because, you know, they've always got new artists coming out and stuff.
Yeah.
And I saw this one. The name of the band was Chon, capital C, capital H, capital O, capital N, which stands for carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, the four most common elements in the universe. I thought, that's a pretty good name for a band. I like it. Nerdy, you know? And I was watching this video on YouTube of them playing live, and I was looking at them, you know, and they didn't make sense to me. Like, they're dressed like total hipsters, but the instruments they were holding were like instruments that like a metal guitar player would use. And so I was like, this doesn't make any sense. What am I about to hear? And so they started playing their first song, and it was like nothing like I expected at all to hear them play. But I was like, I loved it. I was intrigued by it. I loved it. So that's all I'm going to give. I'm not going to even describe what it is. I'm just going to let you hear it. Okay? You ready? This is Chon. The song is called Splash. Chon, Splash.
All right.
Yes.
And I think it's important for people to know that you play guitar. You love to play guitar. And so I think you listen to stuff in a little bit different way than me, for instance, because I can strum chords on a guitar.
Right.
So you find interest in different stuff. But they got an interesting sound.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely jazz influenced. You know, they're playing some jazz chords there, but they're also playing like the leads that they're playing are definitely metal leads, but with no distortion and rhythmically very much progressive metal, you know, in terms of the drums and other things. So I thought it was interesting music, different and fun to listen to. I've been listening to a lot of instrumental music lately, jazz and other things like that. So this kind of just fell right into that, into my lately, what my groove has been. So.
Well, I think I got a good one to follow up with. Tallest Man on Earth. Have you listened to him before?
I have, yeah.
I love him. Much more minimalistic. It's usually just him and a guitar, and he's singing, and an interesting voice. My mother-in-law thinks it's a terrible voice, but I think it's great.
Right.
He's got a new album coming out, and I'm not sure if the whole album he plays with a full band, but this song, he's got a drummer. Full band, and I really like the sound. I don't even know how to say it. Sagers, maybe?
Okay, let's listen.
I'm excited. I think lots of times when these kind of spare, these artists that just play guitar and don't have a lot of instrumentation, when they invite a full band in, I think lots of times it doesn't work well for me. I just don't buy into it, but I love this song. I hope that the whole album works because I love his voice. I love his songwriting. I want to hear it in a full band setting too.
Yeah, I mean, that had me bobbing my head. I like that.
So what else you got for us?
Well, I got more jazz.
Oh,
I've been listening to listening to a lot of that lately. This is one that my baby loves. We play it all the time when he's displeased and happy, and it usually calms him right down. It's an older track. It's from an album that came out in 1961, so this is old. The album's called Waltz for Debbie. It's by the pianist Bill Evans. Have you heard Bill Evans before, Dave?
I have just heard of him from you before.
Right. He is, I feel comfortable saying this, I think he's the greatest jazz pianist so far that's lived. He's not the fastest. He's not necessarily a bop pianist. He's definitely out of the cool school of jazz. He played in a band with Miles Davis. If you saw a picture of him, he just looks like this nerdly white dude. But he is a beautiful piano player. His voicings, chord voicings, are just gorgeous. I just love him. Anyway, unfortunately, he passed. He struggled with drug addiction, heroin, and died as a result of that. But a long time ago. But this is a track of a classic tune. It's called My Foolish Heart. And I just love the way he plays it. So listen to this.
All right.
That's Bill Evans, My Foolish Heart.
That's pretty. I like it.
It's cool.
That's something I definitely would enjoy listening to, I think.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's great to put on, like, if you just want to relax, put on some candles, and just be.
And you know how I love to just put on my candles, ease back into the bathtub, some bubbles, and some jazz.
Yeah.
It's
relaxing.
Oh, yeah.
Or just try, on a late at night when you're driving home and it's dark and the street lights are on and the sun's gone down and the stars are out, the moon's come up. You put on that song, drive home after a work or whatever you've been doing, and yeah, it'll put you in a good mood.
If you want something to put you in a good mood, I've got it for you, Jordan.
All right.
Three Dog Night. You've listened to Three Dog, right?
Of course.
Oh, man.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Oh, Joy to the World. Fantastic. I've Never Been to Spain. That's one of the 10 songs I can play on guitar. But these guys are, 70s icons. You look up pictures of them. It's a weird band, but basically there's three main lead singer dudes, and they just kind of trade vocals. And if you want, the best looks from the 70s, just look up pictures of these guys, and
yeah,
they've got awesome looks. They look great. Yeah.
Yes, agreed.
But when I was a kid, when you're a kid, you think great things. But Mama Told Me Not to Come, I thought this was a badass song, and I still love it. It's just great. It's Three Dog at their best to me. ¶¶
sugar in your tea? What's all this crazy question they're asking me? This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, cause I don't wanna see.
I just love it. It's like a comedy track without actually being on it. It's so good.
Yeah. That beginning reminds me of Bad Moon Rising.
Oh, yeah.
CCR.
Three Dog. I think they had other people write their songs. They're kind of like a put-together band. A little bit goofy, but just great vocals, great harmonies. Some songs, when they whip out some falsetto, it's so good.
I think everybody recognizes that song we just heard, you know. Everybody's heard that one.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
And it brings a smile to my face, just like our whole conversation has. But we're going to close it down. We could go into further comic book things. We could talk more about action movies. But I don't think anyone's going to stay with us if we keep this up.
Probably not.
Jordan, you've got some book wisdom for us.
Yeah, I do. So this is from a guy named Charles L. Black, Jr., He was a lawyer, and he worked in one of the big cases that kind of started it all off, which was in the Supreme Court, called Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember this case from your semester of law school? Did you make it that far?
I didn't even make it that far, but I remember it just from general history.
Right. It's a case that we should all know, and it was about segregation in public schools. And so he was one of the attorneys that fought to get schools desegregated. And he wrote this book called The Humane Imagination. I think it's probably out of print, but I took a class in law school called The Life of the American Lawyer. And it should have been a prerequisite before you started, because if I had taken that class before law school, I think it would have scared me right out of it, which probably would have been a good thing. But I took it in my last semester. But any event, this was one of the books that we read for that class, and this part stuck out to me a lot about what he says. So he talks about what he calls the Great Society, which is kind of like the ideal society. So this is what he talks about, what the Great Society is, and how the humane imagination plays its part in that. The Great Society, then, is one which orders itself and moves within its order with the goal of taking into account and nourishing the well-being and happiness of all, having continual regard to the feelings and thoughts, the judgments, the desires of all its members. It is obvious that we have now bridged over to the other term in my title, the humane imagination, because the absolutely indispensable means of our dealing with the inner personalities of others is that we imagine and continually reimagine, as truly as we can, those inner personalities. We know, as we put it, the inner reality of others only by imagining that inner reality, and by continually tuning and retuning this imagination, by checking it against clues in language and behavior, by sharpening our own imaginative powers. This is an absolutely crucial point in human relations, to imagine the feelings and desires and thoughts of another person, even with careful attention to checkable clues, is to take a dizzying chance. The continual consciousness that this chance is being taken, every time we think we know something about another person's feelings, thoughts, or intents, may be one of the principal wellsprings of charity. But to refrain from such imagination is to resign from charity. Imagination is the bridge between human beings, not just once for all, not just now and then, but all the time, all day, every day. That's it.
And I think what I like about that passage is, it was applicable at that time, but I think it's very much applicable now.
Oh, yeah.
Just our interactions with others. It doesn't have to be about race or skin color. It can just be about, am I respecting the people around me as I should?
Exactly. And that's kind of his point, is as we go through life, we don't know what other people are feeling. The only way is we guess, we imagine what it must be like to be them, what they must be feeling based upon context, you know, what we know. And the more that we know and the more we learn about other people, the better we will be able to imagine what they must feel or what we would feel if we were in their situation, you know? And I think that's where understanding is bridged. And so every time I hear someone, and this happens a lot all over, but every time I hear someone say, I just don't understand why so-and-so would do this or why they would do that or why they could believe that or why they could think that. And I always think, well, that's not a confession of a failing in them. That's a confession of a failing in you, in yourself, your own inability to imagine or your own lack of information about the context of their situation in order to have enough information to imagine why they might feel the way they do.
But I think frequently we don't want to imagine because it takes time, and then we'd have to account for this person as a whole person rather than just, oh, they're a screw up or they're this problem, that's their deal. And we don't want to fully understand what other people are going through because then we have to actually treat them in a completely different way.
Right. And Dave, that's what you need to do with the Man of Steel.
Well, thanks, Jordan. It was good talking to you. We got to talk about stuff that I think Steele would have found interesting, but he wouldn't necessarily have been able to contribute to some of this stuff. So I'm glad we got together.
Yeah, if only, I think he maybe could have provided a leavening, a different perspective.
Yeah, I think he would have. There might have been a little more humor if he was in here.
Yeah.
We're pretty serious about this stuff. Like,
it's true.
It's important.
It is important.
All right, Jordan. Well, I'll talk to you later, man.
Yeah, I'll talk to you. Thanks for letting me sub in.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.